accession number 20588, reel 1.
This is Walter Cuss, reel 1.
Right. So, tell me a bit about where you came from. Where were you born? And
I was born in Penarth in South Wales. And I've lived in this house practically all my life.
What did your father do?
He was a private gardener.
Uh-huh. And how many children were you?
Only myself. I was only child.
So, your father was a gardener. You went to the local school, did you?
Yes, yeah.
Where was that?
Victoria Elementary School in Penarth and Cardiff Technical College.
Mm-hmm. And what hobbies did you have then?
I do a lot of ship modelling. There's one up there, example.
Oh, lovely. Yeah.
And ship modelling and gardening, more or less.
Right. And as a boy, did you play sport or...?
Not really.
Support the rugby there.
Well, I played football, but not in a great way, like, you know. Now and again, I obviously played for the school.
Did you work before you joined the army?
Yes, I worked. I was with my father initially as apprentice gardener, initially. And... after the war, I was talking to one of our commanding officers, and he suggested I go in the building industry, and which I did. I attended a training course as a bricklayer.
Right. So the war had broken out before you were of an age to join, had it?
No. The war, I was going to join the army in June, in September 1939, and I was told, I wanted to join the Royal Engineers, but I was told as I was of conscript age, I was in more or less in the second militia. Eventually, I joined the army in January 1940 in the Royal Engineers at Narberth in Pembrokeshire.
So you had a letter, did you, saying that...
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What did you feel like when you got that
letter? I felt okay. I was going to join something, you know, obviously, it's one of those things, wasn't it? And in those days, everybody wanted to join up. Of course, I was of the age that I would have been called up. Well, I was more or less called up. I was delayed because of the fact that I was told by the officials... that I'd have to wait. It's best to wait to see what happens. So I was called up in more or less in the 2nd Militia, which was in January 1940.
What was your parents' attitude to you joining up?
Oh, they had no... They weren't against it whatsoever.
Did they give you any advice?
No.
Do you think your mum was proud to see you?
Yes, I think so.
So did you have any idea of what the nature of the war was going to be for you and how long it might last and things like that?
Well, I don't think we realised how long it was going to last. Nobody ever didn't even think about it. You know, the war was on, we had to do something about it, and that was it. As far as I was concerned, anyhow.
Had you any idea what life in the army might be like?
Well, life in the army in those days was tough. Because... we were more or less, in the winter of 1940 was a very bad winter, snow on the ground. And when I left Penarth to go to this place in Pembrokeshire, it was a small village, way out, miles from anywhere. There was no organisation as such, because when we got there, we were billeted on in houses or old farm buildings and so forth, and the chapels of church school rooms, look at it that way, and also we were sleeping on stone floors, no beds, just a palliasse. The mess consisted of a cowshed, There was no uniforms. Nobody had any uniforms. There were no uniforms issued. All we had was a greatcoat, a side cap and a pair of boots. We wore civilian clothes for at least 4 or 5 weeks, which we were paid to wear. And the fact is that it was really Spartan.
What was your impression of the other people who arrived the same day as you?
Well, we were more or less all from Wales at that time. Local men, quite a few from this area. And this company, it was the 555th Field Company, which was formed by us joining it. And we more or less got on pretty well together. Then, at that particular time, then I got posted to another company, which was the 282nd Field Company. About 50 of us went there. And then we went to Johnston in Pembrokeshire, and we were billeted in a creamery, stone floors, again.
Right. Going back to when you first joined up, what was, you know, what did they actually sort of tell you on your first day, you know? Do you remember what the sergeants or whatever?
Well, the normal sense, I'm going to say they were TA, most of them, Territorial Army. They were elderly, the sergeants were elderly. They probably, well, they got posted, obviously, after, because, well, what shall we say? There were two brothers in particular. I didn't think much of them as sergeants. Why? Used to march us up and down the road and all the rest of it, and drill and so forth. And of course, we just got by, more or less. I mean, the pay was not good, and in those days, it was 14 shillings a week. Five shillings of the week, you had to allocate to your parents, a compulsory allotment.
Right. So, you were issued with uniform as soon as you arrived?
Eventually, yes.
Well, you got the greatcoat straight away. Did you get any other equipment?
No rifles, no nothing. There's no rifles to be had.
Right.
It's a fact. It's Fred Carnell's army. Look at it that way.
So where did you spend your first night?
Well, in this old farmhouse on the floor. There was about four of us in there. And it was real Spartan because we used to put water on a stove early in the evening to wash with. And it was frozen in the morning, so you can tell how cold it was.
What was the food like?
The food was absolute rubbish, to be honest about it. I mean, you had a tin plate. That was you had your food on that, and you had a pudding basin, and in that you had your porridge, and after you had porridge you washed it out and had the tea in it, and it was an old cow shed.
Who did the cooking?
Pardon?
Who did the cooking?
Well, they had cooks there. They weren't cooks in a sense, they were designated, you know what I mean. They say, you're a cook, right? And that was sort of thing. The food was all right, it was wholesome. Can I give you an instance now of a particular chap? Now, he was a cook, you see, and this is true, he was stirring the porridge one morning, a big sort of vat thing, right, and believe you me, he had a glass eye, right, and he dropped his glass eye in his hand, this is true, dropped his glass eye in his hand, and it didn't go in his hand, it went in the porridge, you see. So he's putting his hand in the porridge and groping around with the eye, eventually got it. After that, I never had any porridge for years and years and years. Put me right off. That was one little instance. Then we had a captain, a Major Pink. Now, all he was thinking about was getting us into France as soon as he possibly could. And as I said, we had one pair of boots. We went on sort of called works parade or digging trenches and things like that. That's what we were doing mainly at the time. And he expected us to march past him at 4 o'clock every afternoon, their boots cleaned. Now, we were working in mud and things like that. How can you possibly clean a pair of boots that were more or less waterlogged? But anyhow, we had to do it, and that was the thing.
How did you clean them?
Well, you couldn't clean them very well. Put them on the top, wash the mud off, the best thing you could. You expect them to be polished.
So how strict were they? It was quite tough, wasn't it?
Well, they were strict in the sense that you're in the army, that's it. But they weren't all that strict. I didn't, it didn't worry me.
What was your initial reaction to the army then?
Well, at that particular time, I thought, well, what sort of a setup is this like? You know, all of us thought the same. And, of course, we made the best of it. You were in the army, that was it. You couldn't do nothing about it.
Did you have kit inspections?
We had no kit to inspect, really.
No. Did they do barricade?
Not that particular time. I don't recollect any kit inspections.
Mm. They inspected your billets, did they, every day? Or?
Well, I wouldn't say every day. I wouldn't say every day because it really was a state of flux at that particular time. It was, you were there, you more or less, they sorted you out eventually and you got posted to this other company. That's where that company I stopped with right through the war.
Mm. So how did you sort of, you lads had all come from sort of different homes and different places. How did you cope with the lack of privacy? I mean, you're all thrown in together.
Well, I mean, I accepted it. Now, some chaps didn't accept it. I mean, some turned up in pyjamas and things like that. I didn't take any pyjamas. I knew damn well in the army you're not going to wear pyjamas. And the less kit you had, personal, in that respect, the better for you, really. So we had we got on pretty well altogether. Some chaps didn't like it. Some didn't. Some did, so forth. But I had a positive attitude to it, and so far that you were in the army, you had to get on with it. And how long you were going to be in the army for, no one knew.
How strict was discipline?
Well, the only discipline, as I explained to you just now, is when this major wanted to march past him, more or less with your boots clean and all this sort of thing, you see. But there was no... there was discipline, but not iron discipline.
Were there any punishments for people who stepped out of line?
Not as far as I can recollect, no.
Did anyone step out of line?
Not really, no.
Uh-huh. Right. So, did you have to do guard duties?
Yes, you had to do guard duties every so often, but as I said, no rifles. When you went on guard, you had a pick handle. That was the only thing you had in that particular place in Narberth.
So how long would you stand guard for?
Well, you usually stand two on and four off, 2 hours on and four off.
And how often would you do that?
About once a fortnight, in my recollection, like about once a fortnight.
What did you think of doing guard duty?
Well, we knew we had to do guard duty. It's obvious that is. And I say in the army, you've got to protect security, haven't you? In that sense.
Did you dread it?
No.
No. So, what did you do in? I mean, I don't suppose you had a lot of spare time, but you know, what did you do?
There was nothing to do in a village, a small village in the midwinter, with about 4 or 5 inches of snow on the ground. The only thing that existed there was a canteen run by the ladies of the village. And I think myself, when I went to this canteen, I ate more lion's fruit pies than I ever did in my life. And at that time, they were tuppence each at that time. And we were hungry. We didn't seem to have enough food. So we used to go to this canteen. But that's the only place you could go to. There's no cinemas there, nothing.
What was there in the canteen? Was it apart from the food?
Well, sandwiches and tea and the usual thing. And a couple of armchairs, but there was no entertainment as such.
Did you mix with any of the civilians in the village? Or?
No. The West Walians, I'm afraid, are a bit narrow-minded in many respects, and I don't think, really, that they like this there, because you can understand there's about 250 men in a small village, and which consists of the main street. And that was it.
So you didn't get to look at the local girls? Or?
Oh, no, son, nothing like that.
What did you think of the local people there?
Well, I couldn't make a really say anything about it because we didn't mix with them. Mm. The only people we actually mixed with civilians, as I said, was the ladies in the canteen.
So you did your basic drill there, did you? Did you do your basic drill there, learning?
Well, I joined this place on the 18th of January 1940. About February, I was posted to the 282 Field Company in a place called Johnston in Pembrokeshire. Our billets were in a creamery. The same thing existed there more or less, whereas it was a village. In fact, it was a smaller village than Narberth. And what we were doing there was building a complete trench system, First World War trench system. That was the policy at the time. They thought it was going to be trench warfare on a parallel with the Second World War, First World War. So that's what we were doing. And also there was a brickworks there, and some of the chaps were working shift work, tunnelling under this brickworks, which is, in other words, what you call a sap. If you tunnel under a building, you're going to blow it up. That was the training part. They were working shift work on that. Right, now then, I was working on this particular trench system one afternoon, just before Easter in 1940, and I was covered in mud, and I had a pair of Demmins on, and somebody came up and said to me, "You've been selected to go on leave." "Oh, I think that's okay." I said, "You're not winding me up." "No, it's true. Somebody sent a runner up to tell me, so I had to report now to the company office." And I went on leave, and I caught a train. I caught a train in my denims, as I was, straight off the dunes, because I had no time to really change into a uniform. Of course, by then, we'd had uniforms and rifles and all the rest of it. But then I caught a train, and I came home on leave, and I was home in Easter 1940.
So tell me about, you were issued with your kit then at this second place. Sorry, you did tell me where it was.
Yeah.
Where was the second place you were?
Johnston in Pembrokeshire.
That's right. Okay, so you were issued with your kit there. What did they give you?
Well, a complete kit, what you normally have. You've got your webbing equipment, which, by the way, was First World War webbing equipment, not the modern stuff. You had your hairbrush and comb, shirts, two pairs of underpants, one vest, pullover, uniform, two uniforms, denim overalls, two pair of boots, your thing for polishing your buttons with, and a housewife, which is a set of stuff, you know, for sewing, darning socks and all that sort of thing, and a razor and a shaving brush.
Did you feel more of a soldier when you'd got that?
Well, not really, not at that particular time.
When they trained you in drill, did they use the light infantry pace?
No.
No.
Standard pace.
Right, okay. What about fitness? Do you have PI or...?
Not in those days, no.
Did you do route marches?
Not there, no. No.
No running or...?
Oh, yes, I'd done a lot of running in the army. I was a cross-country runner. I'd done a lot of that in the army.
Did you do that at Johnston?
No.
No, right, okay. So what about weapons training then?
Well, the normal weapons training was with your rifle. You didn't do any shooting. The simple reason, you see, what the trouble was, the 53rd Division then was spread out all over West Wales. And part of the division had already gone to Southern Ireland. Northern Ireland at that time. The 158 Brigade and the 159 Brigade had already gone to Ireland. 160 went in early April. Of course, when we got into Ireland, things started to hot up a bit. Then you got a bit of discipline involved and all the rest of it. You went on the ranges firing and places like that.
So you did your sort of training there. How did you learn that you were going to Ireland?
Nobody knew we were going to Ireland. We were going somewhere. Everybody thought we were going to France. I mean, if you got on a train in Johnston about 6 o'clock in the morning, we went all the way right up through England, or up to Scotland, to a place called Stranraer. And we shipped out overnight to Stranraer. We landed in Larne, in Northern Ireland. From there, we went to Banbridge. And we got out of the station in Banbridge about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and we marched all the way to this barracks, which was in Banbridge, on the side of the River Ban. It was a converted linen factory, which had been already altered for us. Now, when we got in this linen factory, the whole company was one sleeping or living on one floor, the ground floor. There was no partitions, no nothing. All that existed in there was stoves every so often, and everybody was in the same room. All the rifles were against the wall and all chained up.
What did you think of that bit of a change from?
Well, I'm going to say, what can you do? I'm going to say, you're there, you've got to get on with it. That's what I thought about it, didn't you? I wouldn't kick it. Some blokes did kick about it, and some got into trouble. Some put on charges and so forth.
For doing what?
Well, not conforming. I mean, you know, you probably know in the army or any military organisation, you've got to conform. You've got a set of rules. If you break them, you've got to take punishment. It could be 7 days CP or something like that. But I never got into trouble in the army at all.
Did you have special friends in your...
Oh, yes, I had special friends. One from Cardiff, we were together right through.
What was his name?
John Gandhi, lived in Fenarth Road in Cardiff.
And he was with you there at Northern Ireland?
Yeah, he was there in Ireland, yeah. Well, I have a number of different friends, like.
Mm-hmm. So what weapons training did you do there precisely?
The only weapon training we'd done at that time was training on the Lewis gun and Lee Enfield Mark III rifle. The normal arms, what we carried.
So no sort of rifle or bayonet training or anything?
Oh, yes, you had that, the sandbags, yes. Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Bayonet with a sandbag and all that sort of business.
So you didn't... machine guns, mortars?
No, that's infantry work.
Yeah, right, okay. Did you, get trained in anti-gas precautions?
Oh, yes, and boys anti-tank rifle at the time, which is... a boys anti-tank rifle would be no good against modern armour, such as the Germans possessed. But that was the only anti-tank weapon available at the time, as far as we were concerned.
And you were trained to use that, were you?
Well, yes, we were trained in a way to use that. I mean, we weren't at it all the time, you know what I mean.
So, anti-gas?
Yeah, well, yes, gas, yeah. Gas drill, by all means. Everybody had a gas mask. Mm.
Tell me about a gas drill.
A gas drill was, you went in a building, mustard gas mainly, and another gas, I can't think of the name now, started with an A. Anyhow, we went in this place, you went through the gas drill and you come out and that was okay. You started a bit of coughing and one thing or another, but it was the only type of gas drill we actually had.
What did people think about having to do that?
Pardon?
What did people think about having to do that?
Well, once again, you're in the army, these things you've got to do. I mean, look at it this way. It paid everyone to learn to do these things because their lives might depend on it.
So you thought you might get gassed?
Well, there was a possibility at that time. Nobody knew that. I mean, say even the civilians had gas masks. Because he thought the gas would be used. In the event, it wasn't used.
What about tactics and field training? I mean, you'd been doing trench warfare or trench digging.
Well, we're building trenches. In Ireland, it was more emphasis was on bridging. We'd done a lot of bridging. Not with the Bailey Bridge, because the Bailey Bridge wasn't invented. Box girder bridge. And more or less, and also the fact in Ireland... I digress a bit here. When we went to Ireland, the 53rd Division went to Ireland, they were spread all over Northern Ireland, from Londonderry right down to the border with Newry. In late 1940, after Dunkirk, there was at the time of Dunkirk, we were going to move to France, and we were mobilised to go. We even got on the vehicles to move out, but then it was cancelled. Now, in this particular time, there was a redeployment of the 53rd. All the 53rd moved south to the border areas. The 61st Division took over in Londonderry, Limavady, and places like that. We moved then from Banbridge to Lurgan in Northern Ireland. From there, we'd done a lot of extensive bridging over rivers. A place called Banfoot was one of the places. A lot of exercise took place. A lot of exercises took place. And also, there was a scare on then, after Dunkirk, that they thought the Germans were going to land in Southern Ireland. So So consequently, we moved to a place called Bessbrook. Now, you've heard about Bessbrook quite a lot in recent times because that's the main headquarters of the army over there now, especially SAS. And then from there, we were doing defence works on the border, and that consisted of preparing bridges for demolition. Different places we worked at. A little place called Scarborough was one of them, built a bridge, mined the bridges there. When I say mined the bridge, we prepared them, no explosives put in.
How would you prepare them?
Well, you cut into the, you cut a chamber into the side of the bridge, in the brickwork or stonework, and L-shaped thing, and it was brickwork I put inside in sand courses. And then some of us, all of us, took our turns. We worked on shift work building an anti-tank trap on the border. And when I say on the border, in a particular area allocated to us. And this went on for some time. And then in Bessbrook, that was mainly what we were doing, that sort of thing, in between exercises. And some of these exercises are quite extensive. They'd be on for a week or more.
Tell me about those in a minute. What about the box girder bridges? I mean, how were you taught? You know, what was the training like?
The box girder bridge consisted of two. I've got a drawing there somewhere. I can't. Where are they? I'm sure.
No, it's like you tell me. Tell me, because it's going on tape.
Well, it consisted of. It's a simple thing. It was two end pieces and about two or three centre section pieces. I can't describe it exactly, but it was a long time ago, obviously.
And how big a river could you cross with that?
Well, it was a restricted bridge. It didn't carry any weight to that extent, not like the Bailey Bridge. You see, this bridge was the only one available at the time. And also you had a bridge which the infantry used, more or less, called a Capock Bridge, which was not a bridge for carrying vehicles, but for pedestrians. That was the only bridge, and the folding boat bridge, which you opened out, and it was folded up, and you opened it up, and you got stays inside to strengthen it, and they're a floating bridge.
So you realise the importance.
Oh yes, and so you had to realise that then, and say we're getting into a situation now, at that time, where I've got to go digress on this now. There was no vehicles actually for carrying this particular type of bridge. And a lot of civilian transport was used at that time. There was no real army vehicles. And what we carried the box girder bridge on was an old Albion petrol lorries with solid tyres, with a gate change. Would you want to clank it like a signal box lever, things like that. and that's what we used to carry it on. And on more occasions, we had an accident there where if you went over a bump or something, over the years, the lorry, the base of the lorry, got that soaked with petrol that the wood was rotten. And of course, up went the doings, it went through and cracked the axle. You see, things like that. There was real transport.
Did you think you were being trained with very little equipment and transport to get that impression?
Well, we didn't know anything else at that time.
And who was training you?
Well, their own units were training us within the unit.
That's Walter Cuss, Reel 1.